Today's scripture reading will be from Genesis 50, 15 through 21. When Joseph's brothers saw that his father was dead, they said, "What if Joseph should bear a grudge against us and pay us back in full for all of the wrong which we did to him?" So they sent a message to Joseph, saying, "Your father charged before he died, saying, 'Thus you shall say to Joseph, please forgive, I beg you, the transgressions of your brothers and their sin, for they did you wrong. And now, please forgive the transgression of the servants of the God of your father.' And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, 'Behold, we are your servants.' But Joseph said to them, 'Do not be afraid, for am I in God's place? And as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones.' So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them."
Welcome everybody here. I know we have some visitors in the audience, and we're always grateful to have you among us. Appreciate Zach giving us this reading this morning. And I always appreciate a Sunday morning when I have two or three people ask me what the scripture is, because I know there's a competition that's going on to be the Bible reader that morning, and I'm glad to have you guys, work it out amongst yourselves, and I love the enthusiasm, and appreciate that very much, and appreciate all of our readers and all of those who participate in our worship. Have you ever had to stand up for something in your life that was right, and then had to pay a price for that? There are some who have. And I hope that when you stand up for right, the world will applaud and the culture around you will applaud and everyone will tell you how much they appreciate your standing up for what is right. But I'm going to tell you that many times in the world today, you can stand up and do what's right and the world will not applaud. Because sometimes when you stand up for what's right, it's contrary to what the world wants to do, what they want to believe, where they want to go. But what is it? What do we call that? How do we describe a person who has the character quality of standing up for what is right on a very consistent basis? It starts with an I. We call it integrity. And I'll say very sadly that I'm afraid it's a lost art to mankind today. Because facts and history even can be bent. It can be swayed. It can be changed. I had a history teacher when I was in college, and his name's Wayne Kilpatrick. And there are a few Wayne Kilpatricks, so be careful. There's one, and he'd always differentiate, said, "I'm not that other Wayne Kilpatrick." So whoever that other guy is, that's not him. But Wayne would always say, and he'd use a term called revisionists. He'd say these are historical revisionists. These are people who want to go back and change history, because if history doesn't say what they want it to say, they'll... Now, do we get history wrong sometimes? Well, I'm sure. I'm sure we find out things later that we didn't know at a certain time, and so facts come to light. But that's many times not the case. When the facts aren't what impacts our view of history, and really what impacts our view of history is our own personal bias or philosophies, that's the revisionist part that's problematic. We don't need that. Not if we're going to teach our children the truth about how to move forward, because the value of history is that we teach, we're supposed to learn from it, aren't we? The good and the bad. We're supposed to learn from all of it. And to sugarcoat the bad or to somehow annihilate the good does no one any good. In fact, it just means that our next generation is going to have to repeat the same mistakes so that they can learn the right lesson. Hopefully they'll learn it. But going back to integrity, we're going to talk this morning very briefly about Joseph. An interesting point about Joseph in the Old Testament is, in the book of Genesis, of all the patriarchal leaders that are discussed, more is written about Joseph than any other. More than Moses, more than Abraham, more than anybody else, Joshua, any of those characters that you can think about, more is written about Joseph. And I think that when we talk about those characters, those people, when we talk about in Genesis, there are some things we ought to take away from Joseph's life. And I think there's a good reason why so much was written about him in that Pentateuch, particularly in the book of Genesis. So the one thing that Joseph demonstrates consistently throughout his life that we need to take away is how he dealt with the concept of integrity. Now, Christians in the world today, when you go out and you leave this room, I would hope and pray that, and I'm not going to ask you this question, but if I were to ask the question, how many people here love the Lord? I would expect, if I was looking for a raise of hands, I expect everybody to raise their hands. Okay? That's easy to do in this room. But what about when you go back out into the work world and you sit amongst your peers, or you sit in a college environment, or you sit somewhere where if you raise your hand, all of a sudden there might be a price to pay? Would you still raise your hand? Well, the answer to that will determine whether or not you have integrity. Because if you say, well, you know, I all of a sudden we can raise our hands when we're together and we can say, yes, I love the Lord. But if we stand out in a community where people want to start throwing insults and start attacking our character and start talking down to us, well, then my hand may not. Well, you know what? That's a weak character, and that is a lack of integrity. Because if you're going to be a Christian here, you should be a Christian there. It doesn't change because that you go through that door. And I think sometimes for some folks, it's well, I'm in the church building, it's time to be a Christian. Well, if you don't become a Christian until you walk in this building, you're not a Christian when you get here. That's one thing that you need to understand from a character standpoint. God is not viewing your life is in the, it's where it needs to be. Let's start off and turn to Genesis chapter 37. And we'll take a look real quickly. And I'm going to do some long readings this morning, so fasten your seatbelt, put on your helmet, get comfortable, don't fall asleep, because we're going down the biblical road here. Jacob lived in a land where his father had sojourned, in the land of Canaan. These are the records of the generations of Jacob. Joseph, when 17 years of age, was pasturing the flock with his brothers while he was still a youth. Now, for y'all 17-year-olds, did you hear what the Lord just said? He was 17, he was still a youth, along with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought back a bad report about them to their father. Now, I'm going to address this again in just a minute, but I want to stop here and say this. I've heard a lot of sermons about, oh, here, you know, Joseph went back to daddy and he was a tattletale. Let me tell you something. If this biblical account is correct, and I believe that it is, and if what God says about Joseph is correct, and I believe that it is, I doubt very seriously this was a matter of being a tattletale. Because you give a negative report about someone else's actions does not mean that you're necessarily wrong in the process. He was doing his job. I don't know of any farmer or herdsman or cattleman that has ever raised a profit out of a business and had several sons and daughters who have worked in that business that he hasn't had a specific way to do things. And you may, and I can tell you in the family dynamic, there will always be younger people that think they have better ideas than the older people. And so, well, you know, I know daddy said to do it this way, but, and in my household, daddy said to do it this way, but you better do it that way. That's the but. Some people say, but I'm going to do it my way. Well, anyway, his brothers, and I'm going to tell you why I give you this account instead of the other one about Joseph. When Joseph goes back and gives this negative account, his brothers are going to take it kind of hard. Because I'm sure dad had something to say about it. You know, oh, they think they're going to do it that way. I told them how to do it, and now I'm going to have to deal with it. And so he goes on. But we move on. A bad report about them to their father. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his sons because he was a son of his old age. This is what gave Joseph a hard time. Folks, if you have multiple children, please, 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 don't have favorites. That is one of the most destructive things you can sow a seed into a family. If you want to kill your ability to raise the rest of those kids, pick one out and say, that's my favorite. I was talking with a lady some years ago sitting on her front porch like people in the South are prone to do, and we're sitting there talking, and up rides on this country road a young man on a motorcycle, dirt bike. He's doing wheelies, he's doing all these tricks, and she looked at me, she said, that's my grandson. Now, she had two grandchildren at the time. She said, that's my grandson. He's my favorite. And I thought, oh, sister, you just, please tell me you don't say. And I told her, I said, please tell me you don't say that to him. She said, oh, I say it to him and his sister. And I thought, oh, no. What a devastating thing for a sibling to hear from a parent upon whom you depend for protection and sustenance and fairness and all of the things that a parent should be to a child. To hear, well, you're only second to this other one. And sometimes it can be the younger one, sometimes it's the older one. My wife has studied birth order. She can tell you all about those things. You know, she can tell you about how to middle child and all this kind of stuff. But I'm going to tell you this. If you pick one out and you make them a favorite, you're sowing the seed of your own problem. Do not do that. But anyway, and I would have said this to this kind gentleman had he been there for my counseling. But I was not there. And he made him a very colored tunic. He didn't just make him a favorite. He marked him. He said, when you walk around with this tunic on, even if you're off in a distance, and these boys see you coming, they'll be able to know who it is when they look out and they see you. His brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, and so they hated him and could not speak to him. Now, the fact that they hated him was on them. They didn't have to hate him. That was a choice. Just like loving somebody is a choice, so is hating somebody. But anyway, they couldn't speak to him on friendly terms. And then Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers... Now, let me tell you something. Do you know who gave Joseph this dream? It was God. How in the world can you blame somebody for a vision God gave them? But if you want to hate somebody, and you want to not like somebody, and they're kind of making your life tough because they're revealing your flaws, then yeah, that dream, he shouldn't have, you know. They hated him even more. He said to them, please listen to this dream which I have had. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect, and behold, your sheaves gathered around, bowed down to my sheaf. Then his brother said to him, are you actually going to reign over us? Or are you really going to rule over us? So they hated him even more. Boy, their hate just builds up every single time. For his dreams and for his words. Now he had still another dream and related it to his brothers. Now one thing I'll say about Joseph, he didn't know when to stop. Okay? He should have just after the first dream and that reaction said, you know what, I had another dream, but I don't think I need to share it with those guys. They don't want to hear it. But he went ahead and he told them. He said, lo, I had still another dream. Behold, the sun and the moon, the 11 stars were bowing down to me. He related it to his father, to his brothers. His father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have had? Now, Dad is getting a little bit upset about this. Shall I and your mother and your brothers actually come to bow ourselves down before you to the ground? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the saying in mind. Then his brothers went to pasture their father's flock in Shechem. Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers pasturing the flock in Shechem? Come and I'll send you to them. And he said to him, I will go. Then he said to him, go now and see about the welfare of your brothers and the welfare of the flock and bring word back to me. Now that was his mission. He wasn't a person who was going around looking to tell a tale. He was a person whose dad looked at him and said, I want you to go down there and I want you to survey what's going on and I want you to bring me a report back. What's that boy supposed to do? Look at his father and say, no, sir. No, he's going to look at his dad and say, okay. So that's what he does. Now, the way his brothers could have gotten through this is they could have been doing their job when he showed up. You see, I've never failed to see people who get so upset about the things they're doing that are wrong, that are pointed out when somebody comes down there and points them out. The way to defeat that is not to kill the messenger, it's to change your life. Do the right thing. Do what you were supposed to be doing when they showed up. So he went... So he sent him from the valley of Hebron. He came to Shechem. A man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. And the man asked him, what are you looking for? He said, I'm looking for my brothers. Please tell me where they are, where they're pasturing the flock. The man said, they've moved from here. Now, where did Dad tell them to be? He told them to be right there. But what did they do? They moved from there. Now, I'm going to tell you, that's part of the bad report. He goes on the man said, they moved from here, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. I guess they went all the way to Alabama. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. When they saw him from a distance and before he came close to them, they plotted against him to put him to death. Now I'm going to tell you, this is what happens in a dynamic in a family where people don't deal with their problems. They just let them keep building up. All that boy did was find them in the wrong place. I mean, think about this for a minute. What did he do? He was out there doing what his dad told him to do. His father told him to be there. And so he went and did that and goes and finds them. And have you ever seen people get busted? I'm going to tell you, when I rode with law enforcement, let me tell you one of the biggest things I ran into that I could not believe. You could watch somebody commit a crime, go up and arrest them, and they tell you it wasn't me. You could have them on film doing the crime. And you go up and show them. Look, and they have look here, it's on the film. You can say, no, it's not me. Wearing the same clothes, same hairdo, everything, all that stuff. And no, it wasn't me. No, it wasn't you. No, it wasn't me. Y'all got the wrong guy. That's human nature, folks. 101 right there. They said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Now then, come, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits, and we will say a wild beast devoured him. So the art to getting back good with your father is tell him a lie. Just lie to him and do away with this little troublemaker. A wild beast devoured him. Then let us see what will become of his dreams. But Reuben heard this and rescued him out of their hands and said, let us not take his life. Now, Reuben has an opportunity here. Reuben has an opportunity to do what is right. And you'd say, well, he just saved his life. That's what was right. Yeah, partly. Partly. Reuben buys into this lie here in just a minute. If Reuben was a man of integrity, he'd have said, no way you're going to hurt that boy. You're not going to hurt him. And he's going back to dad, and he's going to tell him whatever it is he's going to tell him, but you're not going to lay a hand on him. That is a man of integrity. That's the person who stands up. But Reuben further said to them, shed no blood, throw him into this pit. Oh, he had an alternative plan. Because Reuben wanted to go to sleep at night. He wanted to go to sleep and know that his brother was, you know, just in a pit. But do not lay hands on him, that he might rescue him out of their hands to restore him to his father. So that was his thought. So it came about when Joseph reached his brothers. Now they've thought of all this and had this discussion before that boy could even walk to him. They saw him at a distance, and they weren't using telescopes or binoculars. They saw him at a close enough distance that they can... Do you ever get nervous when you see two people see you walk up, and then they start talking real quiet? And what makes you even more scared is when they stop talking? I mean, I'm going to tell you. Joseph reached his brothers, and they stripped Joseph of his tunic, the very colored tunic that was on him. And they took him and threw him into the pit. Now, the pit was empty without any water in it. They sat down to eat a meal, and as they raised their eyes and looked, behold, a caravan of Ishmaelites was coming from Gilead, with their camels bearing aromatic gum and balm and myrrh, on their way to bring them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it for us to kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. I want y'all to think about what this man just said. Don't kill him. He's our brother. So let's just sell him. Are you kidding me? My brother, I have two older brothers. One, my oldest brother looks a lot like me. If you saw us, you say, yeah, they're brothers. I've got a sister, and we bear resemblance. Now, my next oldest brother is thin and blonde-haired. I've been accused of a lot of things. Neither one of those. And I remember we were kids one time, and you know, kids are horrible. We were to each other, and I remember one day they were teasing my next oldest brother, and we wanted to tell him he was adopted because he didn't look like us. You know, he's adopted. He don't look like us. Well, anyway, my mom found out about it, and you know who got in trouble. Everybody but my brother we were dealing with, and she let us know that. And now every time I go home and there's a good place to sit or a good place to sleep, I can't be there because my special brother gets to sleep there. My mom has a long memory. She might forget my name. She'll never forget that moment. Anyway, And his brothers listened to him. Then some Midianite traders passed by. So they pulled him up, lifted Joseph out of the pit, and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And thus they brought Joseph to Egypt. Now, first of all, I'm going to tell you two things, and then we're going to read a little bit more. But being a person of integrity may mean that other people are not only going to dislike you, they're going to hate you. Every time you see Joseph trying to do what his father asked him to do, they hate him. They hate him. He gets a dream given to him, a vision given to him by God. And you know what's interesting about that? Is they will bow down to him. The day will come when they will all bow down to him. He will get to a point in Egypt's rank and in Egypt's political structure that the only one that is greater than him is Pharaoh, and he's right there with Pharaoh as far as Pharaoh is concerned. If you don't listen to Joseph, you do not want to face Pharaoh. But anyway, they're going to bow down to him. They didn't like that thought. They didn't like that concept at the moment. He was hated because he stood up for what was right. Young people, I want to tell you something. Do not make the decision about being or doing what's right based on what the world says for you to do. You've got to have a standard that transcends the empty-headed, thoughtless, biased people many times you're surrounded by. You've got to have God. The only reason Joseph was able to endure what he's about to go through is because he had a relationship with God. Now his dad made some mistakes, and I'm willing to say Joseph was a human being and made some mistakes. But as far as the account we've read, he is unjustly hated. He is unjustifiably treated because he stood up for what God had given him and for what his father had given him. Second thing, as a matter of integrity in Joseph's part, he was faithful to his father. I cannot imagine Joseph didn't know how his brothers felt about him. Can you imagine being with all these brothers? We're fixing to have Thanksgiving. I heard a comedian say one time, Thanksgiving is the only time you sit down with people once a year that you can't stand and you eat with them. And there's actually a study that says, now I'm not trying to sow anything. I thought these things were funny. There's a study that says those same people you can't be around for more than 4 hours. So y'all better schedule your Thanksgiving dinners for at least 2.5 to 3 hours. Because after 4, I don't know what happens, but according to the study, everybody's got to go. You know, maybe that's when the fight breaks out. I don't know. But Joseph goes on, and he's a slave in Egypt, overseer in Potiphar's house. Now, Joseph finds himself put into this man's house, and the man gains the trust of Potiphar. Now, I think this is important because businessmen typically don't just trust anybody that comes through the door, particularly with everything as to running their household. That's a big, think about that. Imagine somebody came in to your home and you said, okay, I'm going to turn over my checking account. I'm going to give you all my bank information. I want to put you in charge of my mortgage. I want you to buy all my cars. I want you to take care of this land. I want you to maintain my house. I want you to protect my family. I'm going to put all that in your hands and I'm going to go. Who would you do that with? I wouldn't blame you for being hesitant with anybody. But in Genesis 39, we go on and we read, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard. Now, I want to tell you something. If you're going to make somebody mad, the captain of the bodyguard is probably not the guy. So anyway, the captain of the bodyguard brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. He was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. He made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. It came about that from that time he made him overseer and all that he owned. The Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned. In the house and in the field, he left everything he owned to Joseph's charge. And with him there, he did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. Now, I want you to think about this. Joseph is in charge of everything, and the only real care he's got is, all right, what am I going to eat today for lunch? Now, Will, we know where we'd go, don't we? There's two restaurants, and there's a bunch in Fort Wayne, but Will and I know where we're going. We don't have to ask. We might have to flip a coin, but that'll be about the way it is. But that's the only thing Joseph has to worry about. Because everything's taking care of itself. God is blessing him. God is handling those things. The last part of this verse says, now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Is that Joseph's fault? You think he got up every day, looked in the mirror and said, I'm going to put my makeup on and get my hair just right, get my tunic squared away, and you know, could you see him doing a... No. He was just, I guess, apparently a good-looking kid or something. I don't know how to describe it, but you know what happens with Potiphar's wife. Okay? And I'm going to tell you something. My knowledge of marriages and how they operate and how people operate, this was not Potiphar's wife's first endeavor in this area. Doubtful. Joseph, if you remember, what he did? She lures him in, waits till everybody's gone, brings him in, and in fact, she tells him, you're going to do what I tell you to do. And he said, no, ma'am, I'm not. Now, I'm going to tell you something. If anybody in that house, he should not say no to, except in a circumstance like that, it would be her. Joseph, you go out there and take care of them flocks. Yes, ma'am, I'm on it. You get in here and scrub this floor. Yes, ma'am, I'm on it. You get here and take care of this, you know, fix that leak in the roof. Take care of that road out there. Fix that fence. Yes, ma'am. She didn't want any of that from him. She wanted something else. She wanted him to break God and man's law. He was so determined not to that she grabbed his clothes and he ran out and left his clothes behind. Believe it or not, I remember when the NFL outlawed the rip-away jersey. You remember that? You could grab that thing and it would tear off like a paper towel. Some guy would be running down with half a shirt. You know? I don't know why they outlawed those. I thought those were pretty cool. You know? Can't tackle a man with his clothing. Joseph runs out of there because he is so determined not to defile the reputation of his Lord or his master. But what happens? The thing that happens to so many people of integrity, the people without it, because I'm going to tell you, when you don't have any integrity, when you don't have any truthfulness about you, when deceit rules your life, you can lie about anything. And it's okay to you. Because as long as you're protecting you, everything should be fine. What she was afraid of is Joseph was going to tell Potiphar. And then she was going to be in trouble. Anyway, poor old Joseph gets thrown into jail over a crime he never committed. Do we hear about that today? You hear a lot about it. This is a case where it actually happened. He went to jail over something he did not do because he was trying to be right for God and do the right thing by his master. Now, I want to tell you something about this scenario, and I think it's important to point out. Potiphar was the chief bodyguard of Pharaoh. What could have and should have happened, if Potiphar believed Joseph was guilty, do you know Potiphar could have executed him right there? Without question, without any trial, without anything else. He could have executed him in that moment. I think Potiphar sent Joseph to jail to save his wife. But you can say, well, you think that. Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. Potiphar could have killed him. Why didn't he? He could have, by law. But he didn't. He sent Joseph to prison. Joseph was blessed by God. He was found favorable in the eyes of Potiphar. He proved himself industrious and trustworthy. Have you ever seen a young person that you come across, you think, man, they are mature, they are thoughtful, they are respectful. I can trust this young person with about anything, you know. I've met some young people like that, and I'm telling you, that's what we want our young people to be. That's what we want our young people to be when they get in the presence of other folks. We want them to be like Joseph. So Joseph was like that, and Potiphar spotted it. He was so good in prison that he became an overseer in Pharaoh's prison. You throw the man in prison, he runs the prison. I mean, how blessed do you get? You put him in a field with herds. The flocks grow. in enormous numbers. You put him in charge of a house, it prospers. You put him in charge of this thing and that thing and that thing and this thing, and they all grow. Because God is blessing Joseph. And I'll tell you something else that I think it does good for us to remember about Joseph's life. I don't know where anyone in this room is at in their life. I don't know the struggles you may face, the obstacles you may face. I may know some of them, but I certainly don't know all of them. But imagine what Joseph is going through. Imagine going to prison saying, that woman, she didn't tell the truth. And Potiphar knows I didn't do what she said I did. And all this kind of thing going on. And Joseph had to have some hard feelings in that regard. But he never left God. He never looked at God and said, God, how could you let this happen to me? You have blessed me. You have moved me. You have placed me. Now look at me. If you look back at the trend in Joseph's life, God's using Joseph. He's working him to a point. And it's he doesn't just put him in Pharaoh's presence. He doesn't take him from his brothers and say, okay, you're rescued by Pharaoh. He doesn't do that. Time and time and time again, Joseph has to stick with God through hard circumstances. So my point for us is this. When life gets really hard, please, of all the things you may be tempted to do, do not give up on God. You have no idea where you are headed. Just like when Joseph shared those visions with his brothers, which I will admit was a questionable judgment call. But just like when he did that and those brothers said, we're never going to bow down to you. Guess what happened? I'm not even sure that Joseph truly understood the meaning of that. When you're young and you have those kinds of thoughts and ideas, you may not get exactly what that is, and he may not have understood how they'd take it when he told them. But he told them, and they sure did take it wrong. Joseph goes on, and we get to chapter 41. And I know I'm skipping ahead, but I don't have the time to do a whole lot of these. Genesis 41, verses 38 to 46. Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, if you remember, there was dream interpretations, and he's already done this once, got left in prison because the guy he gave the answer to forgot him. Remember the baker? Goes off and forgets him, but I know we've skipped a lot. I'm trying to catch you up. Since God has informed you of all this, there is one so discerning and wise as you shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you. So listen to what Pharaoh just told him. The only thing greater than you is my throne. In other words, you're my next guy. That's just like what Potiphar said to him. I'm surprised Joseph took the job except for the fact he didn't have a choice. Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I've set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand, put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put a gold necklace around his neck. Now that ring is important, because that ring, that signet ring, did two things. It signified to all that saw that ring, this was a man of power, because that ring belongs to the man of power. The second thing was, if he ever sealed a document, if anything was ever sealed with wax or anything like that, and you saw that symbol pressed into that wax, that meant this came from the man. This is not somebody making this up. This is not some kind of weird joke. This is really happening. This is from the real deal. He had him ride in his second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, bow the knee. And he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Listen to that. I'm Pharaoh, but nobody in this land is going to make a move without your permission. I'm going to tell you what, buddy, those sheaves are bowing, aren't they? The stars and that moon, they're getting ready to bow down. Pharaoh named Joseph, and I'm going to leave you to look at that name. Zephaniah-Paneah. You can work that out when you go home. He gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. Now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. Joseph was known for his wisdom. and he remained mindful of God's message. I'll tell you something else he was. Something else that shows Joseph as a man of integrity is he was merciful. If anybody had a right, and I'm not saying we do, but if anybody had a right to bear a grudge, or as I use the term, grudgery, you know, do you think to the brothers that sold you into slavery, who intended you nothing but harm, who hated you over and over and over again, and then plotted to kill you, and then didn't have the guts to do it, and then a couple of brothers who wanted to do good, but then wound up not doing it, sold you into slavery. Now, how's that for Thanksgiving dinner? The slave returneth, and he's in charge of everything. I can imagine how fearful they must have been. He was merciful in the way he treated his brothers. In chapter 42 through 45, you find that merciful thing. He arranged for them to live in Goshen. Pharaoh said, if they're your family, buddy, you bring them on over here. We'll take care of them. They're not going to starve. In fact, the reason Joseph was able to do that, remember, they came to him looking for what? Food. We're starving. Got no food. The sheaves bowing down. He had reassured his brothers that he had forgiven them when he reveals himself in chapter 45. And he also reassures them when his father dies in chapter 50. Joseph never stopped believing in the providence of God. In fact, one of the most eloquent statements about God's providence in human life is given by Joseph. He says, what all these people intended for evil in my life, God used for good. Now, I want you to think to your circumstance right now and ask yourself this question. Am I struggling? Am I having a hard time? Are there people in my life that don't treat me fairly? Do they say wrong things about me? Do they put me down in ways that aren't true and aren't accurate? Do they hate me because I love God? And I promise you, if you're a Christian today, there are people in this world that hate you for no other reason than that you love God. That doesn't account for all the other craziness that goes on in the world. If you have a job and you have peers, oh, they're competing. And sometimes people aren't willing to simply outperform you because they can't. So they figure they'll bring you down. Well, you know, let me to Corey. You know how Corey is. And we just, you know, we talk about Corey. Corey's a good teacher, and I can't teach better than Corey, but you know, we know you've done. Folks, the world is filled with that garbage. We have it in every aspect of our lives. And sadly and wrongly, sometimes it finds its way into the church. Now, you can talk about politics all you want, and I'm as disgusted with it as anybody else here. I'm as infuriated with it, probably more so than a lot of people. But I'm going to tell you, when that kind of stuff finds its way into the church, some folks need to repent or they will perish. Don't die in your sins. Don't leave this world being the kind of person that the world creates. When you leave this life, be the one that God creates. Be the one you were made to be. Be the person of integrity. The one thing you can say about Joseph, among other things, the one thing you can say about him is at least he stuck to being what God designed for him to be, even when people hated him for it, even when people didn't like him, and he was blessed. And all of those, you know, one thing you don't see Joseph saying, well, you know, Pharaoh, I had a plan about that whole grain thing. And you know, it just, yeah, I thought about that. And I, you know, I stayed up at night. No. He had a vision. Came from who? God. I want to encourage you today. If you think right now life is hard for you, remember this. Sometimes the best results come from the hardest circumstances. That doesn't diminish the pain you may have. But it is to say that there is something that God can make out of that that is positive even from the worst possible circumstance. He can do it. But we got to let Him. We can't sit in our own prisons and mope and sit in the corner and say, I'm not defining that dream. I don't care. If you're going to live your life like that, you're going to take away God's ability to bless you. So I encourage you this morning, if you do anything in this world, Christian brother or sister, maintain your integrity. Walk out in this world and be what God calls for you to be, and let the world do what the world does, because it's not going to change. If you're going to do what's right, you're going to sometimes be on the other end of it, like Joseph was. So this morning, I just want to encourage you. I love you, and I thank you for standing up and being what God calls for you to be. If you're a Christian today and you do struggle and you'd like the prayers of this congregation, we're here for you. And if you're not a Christian today, now's the time to take on that relationship in the waters of baptism, to do what God calls for us to do so that we can be what God calls for us to be. So this morning, if you have any need, please come while we stand and while we sing.